This is a replay of the Tuesday night, April 7th, WGN show. The show started at 10. I forgot to start the stream until about 10:20. But you didn't miss too much. We did talk about miscommunication and had a fine time with it, too. For instance, you may recall when Pepsi changed their slogan in about 1963 after a contest and came up with the Pepsi Generation. In fact, it was so popular with Joni Summer singing, "Come alive, you're the Pepsi generation," that they decided they would use it in other markets they were expanding. Until they got to China, when the translation didn't come out precisely the way they would want to. Instead of "Come alive with the Pepsi generation," they declared, for all to hear, "Pepsi brings your ancestors back from the dead." Considering how revered ancestors in China are, that was one reason the product didn't sell. I'll put a link to the whole story in case you want to hear some of the others on Raleigh.net. My thanks to those of you putting up with me with unscreened radio. We're going to do it again tonight. And I'm indebted to everyone who called. If you weren't among them, I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports pre-enters, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yep, that's Alibaba. I'm meaning to play it since last week, since we talked about sadly, the passing of Dash Crofts. Although I shouldn't say sadly, 86 years old, it was a life well lived. Now, that is the song that both Seals and Crofts were on. It was what they recorded right after the Champs had done Tequila, where they were not in the group when Tequila happened. Tequila was written by Danny Flores under the name Chuck Rio. And he's also the voice who says Tequila. And in Alibaba, he's the voice that says Alibaba. So, Danny Flores. But in the meantime, playing on that, both Seals and Crofts. And it was a good time for them. They met in, Dash was in high school and Seals was, I think, in the eighth grade. And they got together and ultimately they go to L.A. and they join the Champs. And right after Tequila, they get in there. And so they recorded with the Champs for several years, Dave Burgess's group. Although Crofts did take a couple of years away to serve in the Army beginning in 62 and then went right back to it within a couple of years. But the group disbanded in the mid-60s, and both of them were kind of doing session musician stuff, and both of them really wanted to sing. And there were some opportunities, but ultimately, they did some stuff with Glenn Campbell in the GCs, that group, and then the Dawnbreakers. But ultimately, they formed their own group, of course, Seals and Crofts. And so not an instant breakthrough, because that was 69. It wasn't until Summer Breeze, and we had requests for Summer Breeze and for Diamond Girl, and you will hear both of them. All right, so that is the deal. And 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. We have Chuck keeping us honest and on the air tonight, and I know he watches the clock, so I'll try to do that too as we welcome 512. Who are you? Where are you?
I'm Fran, and you just fixed what I was calling about.
Ah.
At least I think so.
What?
Because I was calling to let you know the stream wasn't on, and
yes.
I heard you talking while I was on hold, but You figured that out, so you don't need me to tell you that.
But. Well, I'm glad you called anyway. Yes, usually John nudges me, and that's how we do it. And I'm glad you brought that up, because if you're just joining us now, for one thing, you know, you can always listen to the WGN stream. Unlike me, they're reliable.
Yeah, and we did.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So you can do that. But if you didn't listen to the WGN stream, and you're just tuning in now and saying, well, what the heck did you talk about? We had a fine time talking about mistranslations, and I will give you links to that so you can follow along, since we won't revisit it.
I was listening on. When I saw that the stream wasn't on, I turned to. Actually, no, I called about that time, so I heard all of that.
Oh, okay, good. So you were on hold. So all right, excellent.
Yeah, I was on hold. So I heard, some of those are absolutely hilarious.
They really are. They really are. And, you know, as I say, not going to be political, but what got me thinking about it was the miscommunication that I see between the translation of what Trump thinks and what Iran thinks. And I thought to myself, you know, when it's Pepsi, it's hilarious. But when it's a world crisis, maybe not so much.
I remember that. Come alive, this is the Pepsi generation.
Absolutely. Joni Summers at her finest, and she was their voice for years, and it was great stuff. And, you know, you would think, I mean, here's the thing, especially when it's politicians like the Jimmy Carter gaffe or whatever, you'd think that in a nation where we can go to the moon and back, for instance, that we would be able to hire a translator who had a clue, because, you know, the idea of Pepsi not knowing that they were actually instructing the Chinese to bring their dead ancestors back is a little out there. Hang on a minute. Oh, we're already, and I blew it. We're already in the break. Hold on. Don't go away. Stay where you are.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. See the paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walked on up to the doorstep.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, as promised, that was the first one that hit. Not the 45 version, mind you, but Seals and Crofts nonetheless. Summer Breeze, 1972. And that was the start of a few years of some hits there, and that was on Warner Brothers. All right, so 888-876-5593. We were just talking to Fran when I so rudely interrupted her for the news. So, Fran, I appreciate the call, and especially you letting me know the stream is on. I will try to remember to do that tomorrow.
Well, if I called soon enough, but then I called and then the call got disconnected and I had to call back.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But I appreciate the thought. Now, you know, what's really embarrassing is I have big notes all over that say turn on the stream.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. You'd think that I would read them. Not a chance.
Oh, well, I do that all the time. I write notes for myself and either forget where I put them.
Right.
Or don't read them.
Well, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, you've got an excuse. You can say it's a little harder for me. You know, I'm looking at it in front of my eyes and can't seem to translate it. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there's a complex there, but I don't even want to think about it.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Stuff happens.
Okay, so you listened last night to Johnny. What'd you think?
It was wonderful.
Sunday night. I should say Sunday night. Yes. Okay, good.
Sunday night.
Sunday
yeah.
Night, yes.
It was really good. And you know, he's gotten it now where I can see more of what he was like on the air, because you know, before he would mention an artist, but you know, it was all canned, so then that artist wouldn't play.
Right.
And now he's doing it, so it sounds like it's live. I know he's in Houston, and this guy that runs, he's here in Austin,
right.
And the guy that runs that is in Houston.
Okay, so I never asked him, so he's not doing it live, so it's a pre-record.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
But he's gotten, it's a lot better now because he's actually doing, in a more real time, like, you know, if he has a quiz on an artist or something, he will play that artist right after.
Like, good.
He'll do these little quizzes. Do you know who, you know, this was? He's got a lot of new stuff on there, and yeah, we really look forward to it every Sunday night. So,
great.
If you love R&B and soul and some things that you haven't heard in a while and some things that you have but you like them.
Soul of the city.net. Yeah.
Yeah. He even played me some Marvelettes and said, "This one goes out to France."
Good deal. All right. Well, thanks. Appreciate it. Okay, bye.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Bye.
Yeah, and yeah, soulofthecity.net, and I've always got links on Raleigh.net to that as well. And you know, it was another case where I was determined I was going to hear that Sunday, and it's not replayed, so you got to catch it live or else. And there I was, and I look up at the clock and realize, it's well after midnight. So blew it again, but it's kind of like the notes about start the stream. It's kind of like that. All right, 608, welcome to WGN Radio. Who are you? Where are you?
Raleigh, this is Don from Beloit.
All right, Don, what's up tonight?
We got Resurrection Cola, it sounds like.
I know. You know, you would think a company with that much money, they would be able to hire translators who knew what they were doing.
Yeah, well, I knew, of course, it's very acidic, these types of things, but I looked it up. Pepsi is apparently 2.4 to 2.5 pH, which is pretty acidic. That's very acidic. Because it's got citric and phosphoric in it, phosphoric acid and citric acid.
Well, is Coke any different?
So you could pour it on. Yeah, you could. Well, they're all pretty.
Yeah.
Thick.
That's, I was going to say,
pretty,
yeah, Coke
low.
Is like 2.3, 2.7. Yeah, so that's
not good for dental enamel. But you could just wash off your limestone, gravestone, granite, you know, moss buildup.
You know what I'd like
right
to
on there.
Yeah, their mistake was legendary, and it was written in several places. But what I'd like to know, because of course we always kind of attribute opening China to Nixon, how in 1963 did they get in that market?
Right.
I don't know.
Right. And then you blow it. You get the one chance, and then you blow it.
Right. Exactly. You're telling them that the drink brings back their ancestors. Yes. So I don't know. So I'm not sure, by the way, that they, you know, that's when they came up with the slogan. That's true. I would doubt they actually got into that market until Nixon. So now I guess I've got something to look at, because I just can't believe that they would have gotten in. So
sure.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted you to know that I finally was able to meet up with my surgeon. I got those wire pins removed out of this one finger, finally, after like 9 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And I insisted on local anesthetic, and I got that. We both agreed local would be fine.
Yes.
That's so much easier, of course, to do something like that.
Well, yeah, there's no way I would do a general on something like that.
Yeah. I just wanted to thank you for playing all my songs. I've been listening to your show. I haven't called in. I heard your super short show last night.
Yes.
I really appreciate you playing my songs. I wanted to go back to your comment. I did not know. I always like it when you teach me things, but your comment about that wrong number by Aaron Neville and his friend Alan Toussaint.
Right.
I did not know about that Alan Toussaint connection on that with his mom and everything. That was a great story.
Right, and of course, so many people think that Naomi Neville somehow must be related to the Neville brothers and not in any way, shape, or form.
I got three more for you, if you don't mind. Don from Beloit requests.
All right. I still have apartment number 9 to play, which Johnny Paycheck
co-wrote. That's what I didn't think you had played it yet.
That one I didn't. So let's hear what you want.
I would like to hear I Can't Stop Loving You by Ray Charles.
Okay.
Lake Charles by Lucinda Williams.
Okay, you just digitized Out of My Life. What, after Ray Charles is what?
Oh, Lucinda Williams. Lake Charles by Lucinda Williams.
Okay. And?
And You Ain't Woman Enough to Take My Man by Loretta Lynn.
Yeah, all right. All right.
Well,
very good.
You're doing great with the call-in, doing two things at once. It's your motto, Raleigh James. You're doing a great job filling in for John.
Well, I won't go that far, but hey, if I remember to turn on the stream tomorrow, I'll agree with you. But for now, no, not a chance, but I'll keep muddling through.
All right. Thank you so much.
Appreciate
all right. Take care. Bye-bye.
So,
you're welcome.
888-876-5593. We'll talk to 608 here in a moment. We did talk to 608. That was Don and Beloit. 815 is coming up next. So, a lot of territory, but if you're in the area code, you'll know. All right. So now, before I do, however, time to talk about the Sea Crane Company. I love doing that. You know, emergency radios are interesting things. And radio, you know, when there's a power outage or whatever, what do? You reach for the radio, you reach for the flashlight, and if it's a night, you discover that the radio batteries are dead. And some radios have solar, like the CC Radio Solar, which has a really big solar panel and will charge for quite a while. But what really makes this radio a standout when it comes to emergencies is that it will work no matter what. Maybe you didn't have it out in the sun on a windowsill or whatever, so there's no solar power. Maybe the batteries in it are dead, so there's no battery power. Of course, we're assuming the power is off, so even if you have an AC adapter, that ain't going to work. All right, fine. Hand crank it for about 30 seconds. It's going to play for about 30 minutes. That's right, a little hand crank on the back. And you know, when I say that, you might think, what does this thing look like? And some of the older hand crank radios, I'll admit, yeah, they were about the size of a moose. But this is beautiful. It's about the size of a brick with a clean, modern digital design, 5 easy one-touch memories. And of course, like every radio Bob Crane has developed, has superior reception, AM and FM. Excellent audio. In fact, so excellent that they've got built-in Bluetooth if you want to use it as your Bluetooth speaker because it's that good. And it's also got the weather band and the weather alert. It's got a clock and all the things you want. And so it is the ultimate in emergency radios. And it's pretty, too. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Look at the solar with Bluetooth, the CC Radio Solar. If you can't go online for some reason, all is not lost. They've got terrific customer service. They'd love to hear from you. 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. They'll answer all your questions. You can order by phone. But if you can go online, oh man, great information as well as great products. So if you like radio, you're going to want to bookmark this site, ccradio.com. Look at the CC Radio Solar. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Riley James, and yes, there it is. And Diamond Girl, as promised, I forgot who I promised it to, but nonetheless, rest in peace, Dash Crofts. All right. Hadn't turned 86, would have this year, died March 25th at the age of 85. And Seals and Crofts actually went around that long. And so you're wondering, well, what did he do afterwards? Well, for one thing, raised Arabian horses. And they got together again, and they dissolved after their 1980 album, The Longest Road, but reunited a few times over the years. So it was like an 11-year run, and then come together and all that. One thing they shared was the Baha'i faith that they had been practicing since they were with the Dawnbreakers, so before they were even solo acts. And you can see tenets of the faith into some of the lyrics in Hummingbird or East of Ginger Trees. So, yeah, rest in peace, Dash Crofts. All right, so 815, there we go. Welcome to WGN Radio. Who are you? Where are you?
This is Brian calling from Seneca. How are you doing this evening?
All right, what's going on, Brian?
Not a whole lot. Still waiting on the ballad whose name escapes me from the last call.
Okay, now, see, I got to look for this and see, because I don't, when I was looking through something, I didn't see that, so let me see. I don't know. I don't seem to have you at the moment. What are we doing?
Okay, give me half a second to think about it. In the meantime, mainland China is not the only group of Chinese living as a nation, so they were probably introducing Pepsi in Taiwan in 1963.
Maybe, but I'm going to look at this. My feeling is that the campaign was 63 here, but that thing went on for years. I bet you they weren't in China until a decade later. But I'll look. So what else?
Okay, give me...
You're still looking for your songs.
Give me Justice.
Okay. Yeah,
This is the one about the... Gordon Lightfoot's first steamship, first shipping disaster.
Yes.
Yeah, the Ballad of the Yarmouth Castle.
Yes, before he went down with the Edmund Fitzgerald. Now, Yarmouth Castle didn't hit. You'd think at that time he might decide, well, I'm done with ships, but he continued.
Yeah, and I don't think he ever recorded... Yarmouth Castle in the studio. At least the only recordings I've come across have been the one live performance that shows up on several albums.
Really? Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm totally unaware
that
he did it all. Okay. I'm looking to see if I can even find it. If all else fails, I'll go to YouTube. Probably they'll have it, I would assume, because they seem to have just about everything.
That's where I've found it.
Oh, okay, all right. Then I'll find it there, and I can do that. And so, yeah, it was on some of his albums. But you're right. I think 69 or so is live. So there you go. All right.
Yes, and then put one more request in the hopper if I may.
Sure.
Nelson Riddle's version of Lamento.
Oh, really? Okay. You betcha.
And believe it or not, despite the combination of artist and music type, Nelson Riddle actually makes it work and work very well because he's Nelson Riddle, not Montavani.
Right, absolutely. I'm not surprised in the least. I mean, after all, the guy who gave us Route 66, how can we complain? All right.
I guess you can't.
We'll do it to it. Thanks.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Appreciate it. All right. So we will. And let's see. What else? When I run out of time during the show, I always put 2020 News on the stream after it because it gets quite a few requests. I know the guys are thinking about maybe doing it as a TV thing, but for now, it's radio all the way. And it's just, if you were a fan of CKLW News, you'd love the style and the delivery. But for me, the big thing, of course, is apart from that, is the writing. It's the stories that you hear everywhere. You just don't hear it quite like this. All right. So what's going on with the guys today? Well, let's find out.
Domer Bile plus Hold Please and License to Swill. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News, real stories, real fun. Patriot Lames, Tin Soldiers, and Blakeman's coming. A Long Island militia recruited by a county boss is taking more flack for hiring gung-ho civilians to keep regular folks under the gun. Gimme Skelter's F. Whoop has a number of deputy cogs who appear to have either been arrested or had warrants out on them, legal papers claim. One of the rah-rah recruits is a real estate agent with no law enforcement background. Another's a doctor, the Times reports. Everybody wants to fool the world. Dex and the City, Bum and Glummer. It's no day toilet in the bowels of NYC, but the new mayor's promising a few more public bathrooms. Yet so many restrooms in city parks are already either closed or something out of stain spotting. Blah and odor. A world of dirt for the great unwashed who just need a place to go with the flow. Holding back the rears, who you gonna call? Hindmost busters? Crash Course. Driving a Miss Daisy. Some drunk as a skunk driver's ed instructor in the UK got smashed even before he hit the tree. The juiced up jalopy jerk was found in the ditch, still sitting behind the wheel stuck in the trees. Cops say the screecher creature teacher blew four times over the legal limit. The idiotic incapacitated instructor was on his way to pick up a student for his first lesson of the day. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.
Just great stuff. Like I say, some of these stories you'll recall from hearing them on the news, not written quite the same way. So we thank Kevin Gershon and Steve Langford. Steve is the Grant Marshall character and quite a journalist of his own right. And Kevin, of course, with CBS Paramount for, I don't know, like 50 years. It seems like it, at least 40. In any event, that's what they're doing to spend their time appropriately, I think. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up next hour right here on WGN Radio.
Your arms around me, I get a feeling that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. They don't know how to love you my way. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning and fever all through the night. Bless my soul, I love you. Take this heart away.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's the original, Fever. Yeah, Little Willie John, he didn't write it, unfortunately, as far as royalties go, but he didn't live very long anyway. That's a story I think we've told. But Eddie Cooley and Otis Blackwell wrote it. And, of course, later it was covered by Peggy Lee and all that kind of stuff. She's probably the best known. But that's the original 1956 Fever. And I believe that Dave on the North Side wanted to hear that. All right, it's Unscreamed Radio. If you want to call, I'll put you on hold, and then we'll get you on the air in the order that you called. And that's 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and while you're on hold, you'll hear the show if I'm doing it. If we're in commercials or news or something like that, you won't hear anything. So I'll try to get you on hold if you want. Otherwise, I'll just prattle along on this April 7th. Bobby Bear would have been 91 years. What am I saying? Would have been, was, is, 90, he's alive. Yeah, he is, 91 years old. Yeah, which is just amazing that, good for him. And quite the star. As far as I'm concerned, he did the quintessential country record, you know, all the elements. Not his number one song. Of course, most of the stuff he did with Shel Silverstein, like Marie Laveau, those are the big hits later in the 70s. But when he did Margie's at the Lincoln Park Inn, man, I tell you what, I said, this has every element of a country record. Yes, next Sunday, it's my turn to speak to the young people's class. They expect answers to all of the questions I ask. What would they think if I spoke in a modern-day sin and all of the Margie's at all of the Lincoln Park Inns? Yeah, get down with your bad self. And so, I have a friend who actually was in the service with him, and it was an interesting time for him in the service. A couple things. Firstly, my friend said that to use his words, he was a chick magnet. You know, like moth to a flame. He said, I just want to stand near him in case somebody fell off. That he was just, no matter what, just absolutely, the ladies loved him. And I could see that, having done a couple things with him in Nashville, I could see absolutely how he had that appeal. But the other thing, of course, is he wrote and recorded The All-American Boy. And it was a label copy with mix up. Actually, he had given it as a demo to Bill Parsons to learn the song. But as it turned out, it got released. Fraternity released it as Bill Parsons, but it was Bobby Bear's demo. So Bill Parsons called him while he was in the service and said, I don't know what to do. I'm gonna be on Dick Clark. What am I going to do? And you know, without missing a beat, Bobby said, well, son, you're going to learn the song. And so that's how it started as far as that goes. But of course, from there, tons of hits and tons of awards. But Tom T. Hall wrote Margie's at the Lincoln Park Inn. And yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that's it. But I guess Marie Laveau, number one in 1974. And I think that's the only time he was number one on the country charts. But he was nominated for the Grammy. I don't know if he ever actually won one. That's terrible as far as that goes, yeah. He did. He won Detroit City. That was early, 64. He won for Detroit City. I think that was his only Grammy. He was nominated for other things, Daddy What If and Game of Triangles and Talk Me Some Sense. But only one was Detroit City, 1964, and a great song it was. So I assume, I haven't heard that he is in bad health. Hadn't heard anything actually at all, but 91 today. Hopefully it was a terrific birthday. Patricia Bennett turned 79, and she was one of the chiffons. And so I don't know. I think she was the only original still with us. And I must admit that where I get this information is the late Carol Ford, who did the World's Best Show Prep. I was smart enough to save it. And so I just... Just go ahead and up the years to the accurate numbers and hope that they're still with us. Now, of course, Charlie Thomas would have turned 89, but he didn't make it. Died in 2023, cancer, 85 years old. So that's the deal. And Walter Winchell was born on this date in 1897. Yeah, what's that, 129 years ago. So died in 72, cancer, he was 74. So what else happened on April 7th? And interrupt as you might be inclined. Otherwise, as I say, I'll just prattle on. On 1956, CBS Radio did the first regularly scheduled National Rock and Roll Dance Party. Alan Freed, starring Count Basie. Fleet Flop Blues in April in Paris. And smack dab in the middle with Joe Williams. The Cordettes. Eddie My Love. I loved their version of Eddie My Loves. I shouldn't admit that. And of course, they were known for Mr. Sandman. And not to in any way give the teen queens a short shrift, but I thought the Cordettes did a beautiful version of Eddie My Love. And Tony Bennett did one for the road. Ed Sullivan on this date in 1957 had Buddy Knox doing Party Doll. And in 1963, Ed Sullivan had Frankie Avalon doing what I don't know, because that was not a time of hits for Frankie necessarily. 1965, we were watching Shindig. The Righteous Brothers were doing You've Lost That Love and Feeling. Marvin Gaye doing Memphis. All right. Martha and the Vandellas, Nowhere to Run, and Leslie Gore doing All of My Life. Okay, some hits and some misses. On this date in 67, in Chicago, Sonny and Cher's movie. Did you know they did a movie? Good Times opened. Yeah. 1971, the Carpenters were in Las Vegas. No, not headlining. Opening for Don Adams at the Sands. 1978, the Midnight Special had KC and the Sunshine Band. Yeah, Boogie Shoes. That was a request. I think we played it the other night. I think that was Linda in Richmond Park had requested that. Andy Kaufman was on radio. Yeah, and Roger Miller, Gene Cotton, and Herb Alpert. I like that Gene Cotton. Yeah, Before My Heart Finds Out and Sunday in Salem and all that. Saturday Live in 79, it was Ricky Lee Jones doing Chuck E's In Love. So, on this date in 1956, Columbia announced that from this point on, pop singles will only be on 45s. Yep, 78s were reserved for the hillbilly market. That's exactly what they called it. Yeah. And on this date in 1954, G by the Crows. You know, this is interesting because arguably that was the first rock and roll record, and there's a lot of reasons that I would agree with that. But it was the first R&B song, strict R&B song, to gain attention on the pop charts, and the first doo-wop record to sell over 1 million copies. And, of course, a big influence to a lot of people and on George Goldner's labels, of course. So what else do we have? On this date in 54, Little Things Mean a Lot by Kitty Callan entered the charts. 56, it was Ivory Tower by Kathy Carr. And on and on and on. So that's that day. Chase's calendar of events always tells me what's going on any given day. And I meant last week on April Fool's Day to talk about the month, because first of the month they have a list of what the month is observing, as we will. And I'm still to this day not 100% sure how you get the distinction, but April is Adopt a Ferret Month. Well, everywhere but California, where it's not legal to have ferrets. And that comes from supportourshelters.org, Adopt a Ferret. It's also Alcohol Awareness Month and Azalea Month, Autism Acceptance Month. What else do we have? There are more, yeah, a lot of anniversaries of things like that. But as far as full months, we have It's Dear, Drop Everything and Read Month, D-E-A-R, reminding folks to make reading a priority. It's amazing to me that reading is a priority for everybody. Yeah, I spend probably more of my free time reading than doing anything else. Distracted Driving Awareness Month. Sounds like an oxymoron, but there you have it. We have others, don't you know. It is Global Astronomy Month. Yeah, a good month for Artemis, I would think. Global Volunteer Month, Grange Month. Yes, the entire month is Grange Month. State and local recognition of Grange's contribution to rural and urban America. And Grange with a capital G, by the way, the organization that has chapters all over. All right, so 847, we're going to welcome to WGN Radio. Who are you? Where are you?
Raleigh, it's Lisa in Dundee.
Hey, Lisa, thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you for all the wonderful links.
Oh, and,
The questions, the 5x5s, yes, yes.
You know, your listeners are really smart because sometimes I'll throw one in thinking, you know, it's going to stump them, and they get them.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me what they don't get. You know, some of the things that I think, oh, well, everybody will get that, they don't. And then, like you say, some of them that it's just like, you got to be kidding me. Billy Bob got a few of those last week, yes.
Yes, he did. But there was somebody, I think his name was Pete, and he just flew right through them.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's great. I love it when they get them. So.
Yeah.
But, you mentioned Bobby Bear. We had this great bar out here, and I can't remember the city it was in. It wasn't too far from where I lived, and it was called Nashville North. It was a great, great country western bar. And Bobby Bear was there once singing, and he was just You're right. He's very handsome.
Yeah, and he just had that appeal. And I'm telling you, you know, when my friend told me that, of course, then when I was in Nashville, I had to observe. And it's like, damn, you know, he could get anybody at any time. It was just amazing.
Well, wasn't Charlie Rich like that? I mean, he was really handsome too.
To an extent, yes, but yeah. Charlie didn't have the charisma, because Charlie was very shy. He didn't have the charisma that Bobby Bear had.
Oh, yeah, Bobby Bear wasn't...
shy about anything, yeah.
No, he was just a good old Southern boy.
Yeah,
know?
Absolutely.
But I heard a story about Charlie Rich, and I thought I'd ask you about it. It was... I don't remember if it was, like, on a country western award show or Grammys or something.
Yeah, absolutely, 1975.
And John Denver won, and he...
Lit the card on fire.
Lit the...
Uh-huh, yeah, he did, yeah. I'll tell you...
Oh, that's true?
It's true. There I was at the award show in an evening gown. I took, actually, the general manager of a radio station there, WMAK. I'll never forget it. He's no longer with us, but John Patton was his name. And John turned to me just as Charlie was lighting it on fire and says... I'm so deeply sorry about your career. I thought that was just the funniest line ever. And I said, yeah, I think you're probably right. The problem was interesting. And now that both Charlie and Margaret Ann are gone, I'll tell you, it was emotionally very much a codependent relationship. A lot of S&M. And Charlie was very much at home in just, you know, a low-rent bar, sitting at the piano with a drink on the piano there and having a fine old time playing the blues. And that was his comfort zone, no doubt about it. Margaret Ann was quite the woman and quite feisty. In fact, she wrote some of the stuff. And deal was that Cy Rosenberg, who was Charlie's business manager, and he was a lawyer in Memphis who had been involved in the music scene with a number of players. And he'd been managing Charlie for years. And in fact, literally supported that family when times were bad and all that. And then, of course, you know, Billy Sherrill winds up with a killer, killer hit. I mean, Charlie had other hits like Mohair Sam, my favorite, but never anything like Behind Closed Doors, the Kenny O'Dell song. And so Cy really worked it business-wise to get Charlie to be in big venues. And the problem is that Charlie was shy and had a certain degree of stage fright. So he would drink. Boy, would he drink. And meanwhile, Margaret Ann was accepting of this. Well, Cy, because he saw what was involved, and in fact, for part of my job, and I was just promotion manager, my job was just to make sure those records got on the air. And of course, with Charlie Rich, that was a no-brainer, you could. But Cy was producing other acts as well, like David Wills, and that was, you know, a little tougher, but I got him 3 top 10 records, so he was happy. But anyhow, I remember Cy called me, says, well, you're going to live in Las Vegas for a while, the Las Vegas Hilton. I said, what? He said, yep, Charlie's headlining. You just have to make sure he gets right to his room after the show. I said, how the hell am I going to do that? He said, you're going to figure it out. And I did. Got him up there every night. I can't swear he didn't come back down to the gambling floor. I have no idea, but got him up there. In any event, Cy got him sober, which was amazing. He really did. Well, Margaret Ann at that point started to take pills and do other things. And the bottom line was she was going to get him back down no matter what. And so that was the dynamic, and that ultimately is what happened. And it was one of those things you just couldn't beat. Now, in the meantime, Cy, for becoming big time because of Charlie Rich, he gets involved with the ladies and winds up leaving his wife, who he'd been with for years, who had also written some songs and all this, leaves his wife. And at that point, Margaret Ann says, you're not Charlie's manager anymore. Oh, God. So, of course, that occurred. They had several kids. One of them, Alan, actually, Charlie Jr., he wasn't using the name Charlie Jr. He was using the name Alan because he wanted to differentiate. He got signed on Epic Columbia and all that. But that was pretty much the deal. It was that dynamic, and it was a very strong dynamic where the bottom line is that Charlie was happiest in the middle of nowhere, drinking and just playing at a bar, and so unhappiest when he was the biggest thing on records.
Wow. So, but what made him, was he upset with that John Denver won, or
no? I think I think he was just fooling around. I don't think he cared if John Denver won or not.
I see.
No. It had nothing to do with that whatsoever. He was just
did the crowd like it, or did they?
Well, you know, I don't remember after John had said to me, you know, condolences about your career. I thought, yeah, boy, this is going to be.
So it clearly wasn't planned.
No, it wasn't. The year before was probably the year that rocked Nashville. And I think we're in a commercial break. So hang on until after the news. Don't go away.
Meet me at midnight, Mary. Same place we always go. Meet me at midnight, Mary, and don't let anyone know. Don't let anyone know. Your daddy says I'm a bad boy, and you've no future with me. So we can only get together by meeting secretly. Meet me at midnight, Mary, same place we always go. Meet me at midnight, Mary, and don't let anyone know. Don't let anyone know.
Just got a job on the railroad. The work is hard and long. I'm gonna build us a future and show your daddy he's wrong.
Meet me at midnight, Mary, same place we always go.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, Billy Bob, who wanted to hear that? Yeah, that's the original version of Midnight Mary. And no, he did not write it. I think that Billy Bob thought he did. He's a guy from suburban Pittsburgh, actually. And Ruggiero was his last name. So he was singing as Joey Rogers. Well, when he finally got a record contract, they thought, well, that's too close to Jimmy Rogers. Let's change it. And so there you have Power. And the song was written by Artie Wayne and Ben Raleigh. And actually, it was interesting because it was Powers was a demo singer at that time. He did the demo, and it was Paul Simon, who at the time was recording still as Jerry Landis, you know, doing things like the Lone Teen Ranger, and same label. He refers it to Larry Utah, and so it was a hit on Amy, which, as I say, Jerry Landis, Paul Simon had been recording on Amy, so it made it to, I don't know, about number 36, then ultimately peaked out at number 10, and so that was the deal. There was an answer record. Lorna Doone did Midnight Joey. But the interesting thing about that is, as I say, Artie Wayne and Ben Raleigh, both well-known, actually did the lyrics for a woman named Jamela, who was the daughter of a deposed general exiled to the U.S., along with the Shah of Iran was involved in that as well. And so the deal was Artie and Ben had pitched the Everly Brothers, and they turned it down. And then Larry heard the demo and thought, oh, it's good the way it is. And so that was the deal. So they quickly recorded an album on Powers, as Joey was at that time, Midnight Mary. And it basically did nothing. And so there were a lot of interesting people behind him on that album, too. Paul Simon, Roger McGuinn, Bobby Bear, Roy Orbison. But none of that mattered. Because, of course it wouldn't matter. Because the British invasion was happening. Yeah, if you're looking at your calendar right about then, we're talking about the winter of 64. So that was it for Joey Powers. And he went back to suburban Pittsburgh and died in 2017. I think he was about 82. All right, so that's the deal there. Now, we're talking with Lisa in Dundee about Charlie Rich and the infamous CMA Award show of 1975. The interesting thing on that, Lisa, you had asked me if it was anything personal about John Denver, and I said not at all. The year before, Charlie won all the male awards, and Olivia Newton-John won all the female awards, and the rank and file in Nashville went crazy. They hated this, and they formed an organization, the ACE, the Academy of Country Entertainers, and none other than Bill Anderson was a bigwig in this. And, you know, it was so funny because here's people like, Barbara Mandrell, who later, of course, is headlining Vegas, and she, well, I like Olivia Newton-John, but she's not country. Well, sorry, Barbara, you know, country is what you want it to be. And, you know, so they were just wanting to protest all this. And it didn't faze Charlie because he was never a Nashville insider anyways, Luna Memphis. But that was the deal. So, no, it was just being drunk. It wasn't anything against...
well, they weren't unhappy that Charlie Rich won.
Yes, they were furious Charlie Rich won.
Why? He's a country singer.
Well, he wasn't originally. Remember, Charlie was singing blues and top 40.
Oh.
And yes, he had done country on RCA, you're absolutely right, and some of the stuff on Smash arguably was country and all that, and they had put out some stuff, but no, they can say, and of course, remember, that record crossed over immediately and was just a huge hit. And that was the really odd thing about Nashville. On the one hand, all of these acts wanted to cross over, for obvious reasons. You know, a number one country album sold about 20,000 units. A number one pop album sold 1 million. So
yeah.
If you do the math, yeah, they all wanted to cross over. Yet, when somebody did, they weren't part of the fold. You know, this was still Nashville in the good old boys days. This was still Music Row when it was a closed entity. And so,
yeah.
You know, how I ever made it on Music Row, how I got to Epic, I'll never understand why they hired me. And because I was... the ultimate outsider, but the difference was I was getting hit records, so all was well. You know, so I did marvel at how the hell did that happen, but anyhow, so yeah, it was nothing personal.
Sounds
about
like a lot of fun. You've had some good jobs.
I absolutely haven't. I always had a good time, and you know,
yeah,
I've never been career motivated because I just don't give a damn. And that's one of the things. Give me enough money that I don't have to work, I won't. Now, I'm working now, of course, because I couldn't pay back Sean Compton if I lived to be 1 million years old because he did so much for me. He said, do this, I'll do it. You know, he says, jump, I say, how high. But other than that, no, if I had enough money, then I just wouldn't work till I didn't, and then I'd go do something. And, you know, I became radio editor for Billboard, same kind of deal. I didn't think I would be radio editor for Billboard, but I had to go back to work doing something, and they offered it to me, so I did it.
Now, were you always... taking calls from people, or were you sometimes just
Not back in the day. Originally, I was playing the hits, and what happened actually, why I got out of radio for a while when I was doing syndicated writing and then the Billboard job was because the only real money for me in radio was morning drive. And for whatever reason, I became a morning drive sidekick, with Charlie Tuna and with other people and all this. But I didn't like morning drive. And I looked at it and I thought, you know, if that's the only day part where there's a lot of money, well, screw it. So I went and wrote syndicated radio, soundtrack of the 60s for Murray the K on Watermark and all that, and then I did the Billboard job. But while I was at Billboard, I was eyeing something, because in the early 80s, NBC brought out TalkNet, and this was talk radio at night for basically pop adult stations. You know, they were music stations, and it was Bruce Williams originally and Sally Jesse, who became Sally Jesse Raphael. But anyhow, it was those two, and they were making pretty good coin, to say the least. And so after the Billboard job, and I did some other research things, I thought to myself, you know, I can probably make some money at night on talk radio. And so that's how I got into that.
Because it amazes me what some callers will tell you, how, you know, mostly medically, but
yeah.
Sometimes I'm shocked that they're sharing that, you know, with not only you, but with all of us. And I just wondered if...
Well, you know, it was different when I was doing, say, Afternoon Drive, because I did that in a couple of places as well. And it was very different when it was highly politically oriented. But,
sure.
You know, at this point in time, there's so much politics. You can find it everywhere. There's an overkill of that. And the other thing that's happened is that it's become very emotional and, frankly, very ugly. And so I looked at it and said, it really, it's sad. I looked at it and said, you know, the hole that I see, the respite is just talk about anything but politics, you know, whatever's mind, you know, as long as it's not controversial, we'll talk about it because it gives people 3 hours where they don't have to think about it. And, you know, whatever, whatever anybody wants to talk about, I'm game.
And now were your callers always this free with their conditions, or is that something new?
No, I mean it's probably more on GN than anywhere I've ever worked. But you know, as for why, like I did that type of a formatted show on KOA in Denver in the '80s, about 30 years ago, and you know, it was definitely lifestyle. You know, fighting about breakfast cereal. Do you put the milk on after you pour the cereal in the bowl, or do you put the milk? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, so it was those kind of topics are, you know, best fast food, which we still talk about here as well. But yeah, there wasn't that much medical, and that's fine. Whatever anybody wants to talk about. I've always had a lot of blind listeners, and I love that. And most of them, the commonality is we love the music. You know, if they're not R&B doo-wop type lovers, they probably would have generated to some other show. But
Speaking of blind person, last night on Lionel, that gentleman Donovan from
Canada, yeah,
he called in, and he was on for quite a while, and he is really amazing. He Lionel, I think it was probably the first time he spoke with him, and he was fascinated by him. He's just, you know, amazing guy. But it's so fun to hear your callers on other stations, you know.
Right. Well, absolutely. Well, yeah, people who call talk radio are probably gonna call talk radio. I don't look at it as that I've got any exclusivity on that. Most people will never call. You know, probably less than 3% of the people who listen will ever pick up the phone and call.
Wow.
And so that's one of the things that many years ago, program directors would say something like, great show when you had a full line of calls, and, you know, say, well, that wasn't very good when you didn't have many calls. And I always said, hey, you want a full board of calls? I'll just bring on a psychic. And, of course, every line lights up. Now, probably the lowest listening time, because the rest of the audience says, nah, I'll go away. But so the amount of calls versus the amount of listeners, there is no great correlation there. The only thing I will say is that when you're in very small markets like Rockford, for instance, that market is too small to get your reliable base of callers. You just won't. So you'd better learn the art of the four-hour monologue, or however long it is, because that's what you're
doing. And I wonder
doing.
Sometimes, too, if, you know, when we were, I want to say when I was a kid, you know, the DJs were, you really looked up to them, and they were like a different level than you were.
Course.
And, I remember I talked to Larry Lujack twice.
Right.
But only because he would announce on his show, you know, after my show, I'm going to take 10 phone calls.
Wow.
You know, and that was it. And you could ask him anything you wanted, and, you know, but otherwise they were, like, untouchable. But you're, you know, just put yourself out there, and you just seem like I'm talking to a friend on the phone, you
know.
Well,
that's...
And I think that's maybe why you get so much trust from your callers.
Well, that's all it is to me. And that's why I can't keep these breaks straight to save my soul. Like, I'll have to go to one in a minute because I don't think about it. I'm just talking to friends on the radio. You know, I don't think about it in terms of, oh my God, there's a hot clock and there's spots and there's, yeah, well, whatever. You know, so I guess there's good and bad. I mentioned before a woman who I heard, I think she was on LS years ago, Catherine Johns. This woman, I couldn't believe it. This woman was formatically perfect. I've never heard anything like it in my life. She could do the lead-ins, the promos, all that. She'd hit the mark every time. It's like she was playing the talk hits, and I thought, well, I'll never be that, you know. So, you know, I marveled at that, but it's just not a talent I possess. Instead, I just get on the phone and talk to my friends.
There you go.
That's all it is. And so, and happy to do it, and very grateful, as I say every month, every night, very grateful to anyone who will take the time to call. You mentioned calling Lou Jack as a kid. Kids will do that. Kids will call, not as much anymore, but back in the day when disc jockeys were celebrities, as it were, you know, and local personalities.
Oh, I was a nervous wreck.
Yeah, but kids will. They'll call for the request. They'll call for the contest. They'll do. But you know.
Yeah,
but
true.
Adults, no. Very few adults will ever pick up the phone and call the radio station. So I am grateful to each and every one who does.
That's great. All right. Well, I'm sure you're missing your husband.
Yes. I thought you were going to say, I'm sure you're missing the commercial break, because I think I'm doing that too.
Well, that too.
Right. Okay.
All right. I'll let you go.
Okay. Bye. And we'll pick it up right after this on WGN Radio.
My thoughts return to the things we used to do, and in my heart comes a haunting refrain. Please tell me, am I to blame? In my lonely room, our dreams have and all that's left is a memory of you. Please tell me, what can I do? Though things we used to do linger in my heart, you said that we were through right from the start. Now I can go on dreaming of you. So there's nothing left to do but cry. In my lonely room, the memories are too hard for me to bear.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Those, of course, are the Larks. Yeah, with Gene Mumford. Talking with Stan in Dearborn about Gene, and he said, yeah, play some of the Lark stuff, and so we are. In fact, he had requested one that you will hear right after the news, but my favorite was In My Lonely Room. Of course, having no relationship whatsoever to the Holland Dozier Holland In My Lonely Room that they wrote for Martha and the Vandellas years later, but that's the deal, and Gene Mumford was just so good. All right, possibly one of the best tenors in all of doo-wop history, I do think. So we'll play I Live True to You, which I think is what Stan wanted here. And after the news, oh, this is great. We've got 512 and 737, which I think is a 512 overlay, but we'll find out. 312 Chicago and 573 on unscreened radio, and so we'll answer them in the order the calls came in. And I appreciate you holding. During the news, you will hear nothing. After that, you'll hear me coming up right after this on WGN Radio.
Though we may be miles apart, others may have my company, but you'll only have my love. When nature pulls her curtain down, wherever you are, if you have the slightest yearning for the things we used to do, then pray for my returning, and I'll come back. To you, I'll promise we
do, 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 do.
A sacred vow I'll always keep until we meet.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, probably the best lead singer. Well, that's hard to say because there are other nominees, of course, but Gene Mumford doesn't get enough of his due. It was interesting. I mentioned he was from Durham, North Carolina, but in 1945, he wound up getting arrested by the military police, and they were rousting people looking for marijuana, and they turned them over to civilian authorities. And actually, they were satisfied of his innocence. But while he was leaving police headquarters, a white woman looked at him and said, "He's the one." What? And so he's rearrested, charged with attempted rape, housebreaking, and assault. None of that's true either. But the case took a year to come to trial. He was free on bail, thank God. But he was mentioned as being part of a North Carolina singing group. And that was interesting because that led ultimately to... And by the way, the deal on this, let me just as an aside say he was found guilty of that, which was absolutely not true. And the conviction was upheld. He spent a couple of years in jail, 2.5 years. And while he was there, obviously maintaining his innocence, he was also maintaining the roads in North Carolina. And his father never stopped working on his behalf, along with the State Bureau of Investigation. And finally, enough evidence came to light that absolutely he was not involved in any way. It was an absolute full pardon. And served 29 months in jail, though. And as far as that goes, that happy occurrence coincided with the formation of a group, the Jubilators. And that was the deal there. And, of course, from there, and the Jubilators actually got some record deals. They went to Harry Blaine to Jubilee and recorded some stuff there. And nothing really unusual. Then they went to Regal, the Braun Brothers label in New Jersey, and more Jubilators, and then to Newark, Savoy, and that was interesting as well. I think they were not the Jubilators at that point. They were the Four Barons. And then they went back to Manhattan, went to Apollo, the Southern Harmoniers, and this time they were at Mastertone Recording Studios, and the Cella Singers had used the same studio that morning. They laid down more gospel tracks, and it was interesting that in one day there were 17 masters for 4 companies under 4 different group names and 24 personal names. Right, exactly. And ultimately, they did have a real recording contract, and ultimately, Gene Mumford, and we'll tell you some other time, don't want to make this too long, but got in the Larks. Yeah, and the rest, as far as that, is doo-wop history. All right, so let's see. In order of calling, I believe it is the Austin Overlay 737. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Oh, my goodness, I'm right
all
here
right.
having a
all
late
right.
dinner. How are you?
Soulofthecity.net, yes. All right, how are
that
you?
That would be me, Johnny
yes.
G, in Studio B, having a great time for you and me.
I love it. Now, see, I thought you did the show live.
What are you talking about?
Soul of the City. Tran said it was actually tracked. Is it live or not?
It's both.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's actually both. Okay. I've been working on this interface thing with well, it's such a long story. It's actually boring how it's done. But all the music is in a computer that's not here. And recently I just... Well, when you first put a radio station on, you want to get the basics down. You want to get the music in there. You want to, you know, set the tone for what you're doing. And that's what we did for a long time until I got an interface, which I explained to some listeners, to get an interface where you can get into that program and actually move music around. You can voice, well, it's basically live, but you can actually voice track. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that Soul of the City show in its beginning, and I can't even remember when we launched it. I think it was, I get the months confused. But anyway, it's been almost a year now.
Okay.
It was a lot of trivia, pre-recorded trivia, jingles, and a little bit of me and music based. So now there's more livelihood to it. No. I used the wrong word.
Yeah, you don't
there's
mean
more
that.
More live to it.
Yes, yes. liveliness.
Never be any money
yes.
in this business.
Yeah, right. Liveliness, not livelihood. Yeah.
Right. I caught myself.
Yeah. I was going to say, wow, if you found a way to do a livelihood, we got to have another discussion here, because that's one of the only problems and one of the heartbreaks is that no one's ever searched for something they've never heard of. And so trying to build something organically online is usually not an economic windfall.
No, I've never really known anybody to make any money off internet radio. That's the rough part about it, is that with all these royalties and fees, I don't think they've ever structured that fairly. I don't think they know what the hell they're doing, or they don't care, or they don't like hobbyists. But, for example, for what I do on the Soul of the City, I would consider it a hobby. I'm not in it for any money.
Right.
I'm not going to make any. I know I'm that realistic to know that. But, but when it comes to these royalties, if I wanted to put a station like that on 24/7, I'd be burning money. I can't do that.
Well, right, because there's minimums as far as that goes. But it's really a heartbreak, because I don't think Congress was trying to wipe out hobbyists. And actually, some of the things they would have liked to preserve, you know, like our harmonica favorites or whatever, are the very things that wind up not able to continue. Sound Exchange, which of course is the organization that Congress created to collect the royalties for the artists and the labels. But the problem with that, for stuff like We Play, and like I play on KJAA, you can't find the labels, number one. You there's no way in hell you can. And if you're looking for an ISBN...
I know, so how do they justify it?
Well, what happens is you on these reports, you have to write down an ISRC number if you can get it. Well, probably some, you know, CD came out 40 years later with the track on it, and it has an ISRC number, so you're giving it that. But the other thing, of course, if you don't have that number, you have to have the label and the album title. Well, of course, you're ahead of me already. What album? All right, there are no. So finally, years ago, I started writing down the flip sides because that was the best I could do. And but the sad part is, of course, very few of the artists that we would play and virtually none of the labels that we would play would ever see a dime, because you can't even find these people. But that said, we're a real drop in the bucket compared to the Spotify's of the world, in that they're playing people who are, you know, well-known on entities that people know. But why isn't there a carve-out for us? Well, it's real simple. Every time this is renewed, you've got all the labels who have all their lobbyists telling the congressional people everything, and the small guy doesn't have the wherewithal to have lobbyists. You know, where are you going to get that money? And so, consequently, it's the voice that's never heard. So
it's a shame, because for a while there was a lot of people doing internet radio, and then I think that's when maybe Sound Exchange came along and just absolutely just threw a big wrench into the whole thing, and a lot of these people wanting to do it legally.
Couldn't
they
do it.
Just threw in a towel and gave it up.
Well, the thing is, Sound Exchange doesn't make any decisions themselves. These are congressional mandates. And so,
Really? Yes.
This is not Sound Exchange as an organization deciding how to collect the royalties. It has nothing to do with that. They follow orders. They follow congressional orders. And so the real key is every time it renews, and it's usually every 5 years, and the NAB got in there this time wanting some changes for broadcasters. But again, these are, for the most part, big ticket items. And then, of course, non-coms are dealt with differently and all that. Unfortunately, the royalty rate for internet only is a lot higher than the royalty rate for broadcasters. But what really needs to happen is some form of a lobby for the little guy to present it to Congress to explain what's going on. Because the very thing they were trying to promote is the very thing they're killing.
I don't see that ever happening.
Well, you never know. As far as that goes, it'd be nice if somebody with deep pockets were interested enough in preserving the music to do it. And it's hard to say, but it is It is not Sound Exchange that's making the rules. They're just carrying it out.
So, so when you if you put on your there is a outfit streamer called Live 365.
Right, and then they'll pay the royalties, and you know you'll pay them as far as that goes. You can do that.
Yeah,
if you want.
And they bounced around for years. They shut down for a while.
Exactly.
Came back, and
right.
It's going back and forth and back and forth. But to be honest with you, I have done some stupid things in my life. But to try to put on an internet radio station, I don't have money to just torch, and that's all you're doing. You're not going to get any return. You know, you'll love it. You'll have fun doing it. You'll and entertain a certain audience of people, but you're not going to make a dime.
No, no. And the other thing is you have to have the analytics. For instance, Sound Exchange only cares about U.S. listeners, so you have to have a way to know where those IP addresses are, assuming they're not using some VPN, but assuming they're where they appear to be, so that you are ferreting out Belarus or Germany. Hello, operator.
Explain that again.
Okay.
I'm trying to follow that.
Sound Exchange royalties only apply to U.S. listeners. So if you have a listener in Canada or if you have a listener in Belarus, they don't count for your Sound Exchange tally. So however you're doing this, if you've got a server, is you've got to be able to recognize where the IP addresses are based so that you aren't paying for listeners that you aren't obligated to pay for.
I see. But, and so how expensive is
it? Usually, for broadcasters right now, there's a minimum. You're paying, I think, per station, I'm paying this year $1,100 per station, just as an absolute minimum, and it's going up to $1,250 next year or the year after or whatever.
Annual?
Yeah, that's a minimum. And then from that, but you see, what you have to do then is the reporting, and that's where you have to have the analytics to be able to do the reporting. And a lot of people.
For the simple guy like me,
right?
I wouldn't even know how to do it.
Well,
I mean,
that's where you'd go to a service that would charge you more than you would otherwise have to pay, but that they do the analytics for you.
And so, if you put on a radio, take Live 365 and them paying all the fees for you and everything, you put on a internet radio station by yourself, which people have done, and so what? If you want to be legal, you have to pay BMI, ASCAP, CSAC, and all these
and GMR and GMR, yeah. Unfortunately.
What is GMR?
Oh, I wish I didn't have to tell you. GMR, Irving Azoff, the guy who managed the Eagles, he started his own performing rights society, and you got to pay him. It's that simple. And long story, but that's the upshot. You'll pay him. And so
we're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4 organizations?
Yeah, here? 4 performing rights. That is for publisher and a writer. BMI, ASCAP, CSAC, and GMR do not pay. Artists do not pay labels. It's strictly writer-publisher.
Do you think this is fairly balanced?
No, I think no. And unfortunately, again, especially if you're in specialty genres, it's a joke. But it is what it is.
There's some guy out of Dallas that does a radio station called Radio Dismuke. And all the music that he plays is real, real, really old. So I imagine there's no rights there because the copyrights are gone.
Yeah, 25 to 35. There are some of those 35 copyrights that at this point could be in, but likelihood, no. I can't speak to how he's doing it.
So it's pretty good if your mind.
If you want to hear 25 to 35.
Yeah, I mean there's some interesting stuff back there. By the way, I just want to mention this real quick. There are two artists that come to mind that young people that I have noticed over the years gravitate to very quickly. I'm talking about soul artists.
Okay.
One of them is Sam Cooke.
Well, of course.
The other one is Jackie Wilson.
Yeah, both make sense.
tell me why you think that is. I would call their music, in the eyes of a lot of younger people that have never heard them before, rather timeless. I don't know if that's too much of a cliche, but what in the world is it? Yes, of course, Jackie Wilson and Sam Cooke were both very unique, but what is it about the talents of those two artists that catch the ear of somebody that's very young?
Couldn't begin to tell you. You know,
do you agree with me?
You know, I believe you. Do I know it personally? No, because I'm not involved with young people to know what they're listening to.
Well, I've run into it before when I was at KFMK in Houston, when I'd hire young producers or something, and, you know, they'd love their Elvis and they liked the Beatles and all, but these were young, predominantly male. And they would just gravitate to Sam Cooke and Jackie Wilson in a heartbeat.
The only one I can think of, when I was doing the show on XM and I was in Philadelphia, I got a kid there, a high school kid, who loved doo-wop, and he had to do a school project. And he asked me, it had to do with coming in and all that. He asked me if he could come in and, you know, be involved in the show for a couple days watching. I said, sure. And, I think his favorite thing might have been the metronomes. I mean, it wasn't Sam Cooke or Jackie Wilson. It was hardcore doo-wop.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens, you know.
And, you know, as far as doo-wop's concerned, I don't brag about this, but I don't know much about it, to be honest with you.
Well, it doesn't exist. For one thing, it doesn't exist. It's vocal group harmony. You know, the term doo-wop didn't even come around until about 1970. And it came,
really? Not that I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. It Gus Gossard, I think. But bottom line, it came from the lyrics, doo-wop, obviously. But no, as a music form, it's vocal group harmony. And, you know, I was playing the Larks just earlier in 1951 on Apollo. That's typical vocal group harmony. So that's what that was. And
I love the sound, and a lot of that music I really love. I just don't know it.
Well, because a lot of it never charted is the problem, and a lot of it is not the thing that was necessarily played on popular stations. You'll get some things that are, obviously, you know, let's face it, everybody knows In the Still of the Night, but how many other Fred Parris and Five Satins records can they name? You know, so that happens.
True, and I'll tell you another thing, I'm really not proud of it. I was never an album listener. I played the hits.
Well,
I bought the hits.
Right.
Nothing but the hits.
None of us were. None of us really were.
God only knows how much album product it was. Well, for example, you take the Four Tops, their second album. They had some great album tracks on there.
Oh, this is true. But Motown really changed the paradigm when they recorded albums on everybody, pretty much, that they had. Not 100%, but most. And prior to that, it was a singles, either 45 or shellac market. There were no albums. You know, I think one of the first rock and roll albums was That Play with the Playmates, you know, doing Beep Beep.
Oh, God help.
Yeah, right. It was an album, At Play with the Playmates. It had Joanne and What Is Love and all that kind of stuff. You know, typical roulette small mulch. But for the most part, it was a 45 market. So when you're saying that albums, you know, the Beatles, more than anything, what the Beatles gave the music industry was selling albums to kids. Because before the Beatles, they were buying singles, period. And here comes Meet the Beatles and introducing the Beatles for $2.99 mono and $3.99 stereo or whatever. And these things are selling like hotcakes. And that was a paradigm shift in the music industry. Because there, before that, popular music was all about the single.
I'm playing your producer. It's 29 past the hour.
Oh, I guess. Oh, I'm already in a break. How about that? Thanks for noticing. Hang on. Don't go away. All right. In fact, what I want to do, will you call me back tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hope you will. And call earlier, because I need callers. And I know I've got a lot of people waiting, and I'm going to run out of time. So call me back tomorrow
night. Okay.
Okay, good.
I'll do it.
Okay, bye.
Okay.
All right, and to everybody else, we'll get to it right after the news right here.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho, é o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho, é um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol, é a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol, é peroba do campo,
é o nó da madeira,
canga,
é uma tita pereira,
é madeira de vento,
da ribanceira,
é um mistério profundo,
é o queira ou não queira,
é o vento
a chuva chovendo, é conversa ribeira das águas de março, é o fim da canseira,
é o pé, é o chão,
é a mastradeira,
passarinho na mão,
pedra de atiradeira,
é uma ave no céu,
é uma ave no chão,
é um regato, é uma fonte,
é um pedaço de pão,
é o fundo do poço, é o fim do caminho, no rosto o desgosto, é um pouco sozinho, é um estrepe,
é um prego,
é uma ponta,
é um ponto,
é um pingo,
pingando,
é uma conta,
é um conto,
é um peixe, é um gesto,
é uma prata brilhando,
é a luz da manhã,
é o tijolo chegando,
é a lenha, é o dia, é o fim da picada, é a garrafa de cana, estilhaço na estrada,
é o projeto da casa, é o corpo na cama, é o carro enguiçado, é a lama, é a lama,
é um passo,
é uma ponte,
WGN
é uma
rama, radio. I'm Raleigh James. Elise and Tom, Elise, Regina, Antonio, Carlos, Jovim, and initially they hated each other. She was a newcomer and preferring a lot of the production techniques, just like the early 60s, where he was more of a minimalist, much more into basics when it came to Bossa Nova. A lot of clashes, but they were in L.A. in 1974 in the studio, and the sessions almost didn't happen because, as I say, they fought like cats and dogs. But separating them and not telling each other what the other was saying about each other. Yeah, it was like that. They got the album done, and from that came a real mutual respect for one another, because it was clearly a masterpiece all the way around. And so that was Isaac who wanted to hear Waters of March. That's the original Brazilian, as I say, Tom and Elise. In fact, from those sessions, they got an entire album out of that called Elise and Tom. And Aguas de Marcos was one of the cuts, obviously, 1974 on Phillips. But Isaac had mentioned wanting to hear it with English lyrics. And actually, Sergio Mendes and Brazil 77 in 1974 put together a really nice version of it as well.
It's the end of the road. It's the rest of the stump. It's a little alone. It's a sliver of glass. It is life. It's the sun. It is night. It is death. It's a trap. It's a gun. The oak when it blooms. A fox in the brush. The knot in the wood. The song of the thrush. The wood of the wind. A cliff. A fall. A scratch. A lump. It is nothing at all. It's the wind blowing. Of March, it's the end of the strain, it's the joy in your heart, the foot, the ground, the flesh and the bone, the beat of the road, a slingshot stone, a fish, a flash, a silvery glow, a fight, a bet, the range of a bow, the bed of the well, the end of the line, the dismay in the face, it's a loss, it's a find, a spear, a spike, a a trip, a drop, the end of the tale. A truckload of bricks in the soft morning light. The sound of a shot in the dead of the night. A mile, a must, a thrust, a bump. It's a girl, it's a rhyme, it's a cold, it's the mumps.
WGN Radio, and that is Sergio Mendes, Brazil 77. And what's interesting about this is that the translation was also done by Antonio Carlos Jobim, who, of course, did the Portuguese lyrics as well. And he really wanted to come up with something that was not a literal translation, but would reflect the song's imagery and rhyme in English and all that kind of stuff. And I think he did a wonderful version of it. So some of the translation is far from exact. The imagery is sometimes different than the Portuguese version, but conveying the same feelings of life and the passing of time. And so that's Waters of March. All right, now, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and let's see, what do we have here? I know somebody hung up and called back, and that screwed up their timeline, and I apologize for that because I don't remember who it was. So we're gonna check out 573. Welcome to WGN. Who are you? Where are you?
Yeah, is that me?
It is you.
Oh, hey, Raleigh, it's Brian in Jefferson City, Missouri.
Hi, Brian, what's up?
Not much. Haven't talked to you in a while. I'm more of a listener than calling in a lot. But the lady you talked to earlier about, she kind of made me remember. I first remember listening to you was about early 1988 on KOA when you were
right.
in Denver. You did late night, about 11, 12 at night.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was the same deal, the 10 to 1 shift, pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then how many years did you fill in as guest host on Coast to Coast?
You know, I did it twice. And the first time was from 99 through 2000, and it was probably only a few months. And I was, right. You know, Art Bell's designated replacement. But there was so much behind-the-scenes stuff that I bolted. And then in 2008, I did a weekend thing for, is again, my buddy Sean Compton, who saved me more times than you know, who asked if I'd do a Sunday night thing. And I did for like about 8 months. But there again, I couldn't take it. You know, I don't do well with management. You know, it's interesting. Lisa Dent had me on last week, which was kind of her. And, you know, she mentioned about my career. And I kind of had to laugh because Lisa had been on one station 14 years. Hell, there were some stations I think I was on them for 14 minutes. So the key to me is you'd better leave me alone or I will bolt. And so that's that was the story there. Yeah, the political backdrop of Coast. The other thing, when I first did it for Art, this was a great show. And I mean, it was one of those things where you just open the lines and they're flooded with great callers. But the problem is, ultimately, they went through a couple hosts, and then Art was back for a while, and then he left. And I think they wanted someone who would never complain no matter what. Well, unfortunately, they got somebody who completely tubed the show. The show is utterly unlistenable. And what would happen was when I was doing it on Sunday nights, I was getting no calls. So it went from literally nonstop, no matter who they were, to just a vast wasteland, to quote Newton B. Minow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it got dumbed down to the point that it was no longer fun to do. But in the Art Bell days, he was a master at that. He was made for that. And I had fun the first time around. Yeah. I really did. Until they started to bother me, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Didn't he have a lot, like in the 99, 2000, a lot of personal issues going on
yes.
in his life?
Well, yes.
When I, that's,
yes.
When I started listening to him in 1999, he had like three or four guest hosts
right.
every week. That was,
right.
He only did one or two days.
No, see, it was much earlier he was doing that show. He was originally just doing it from KDON in Las Vegas, and then the company out of Oregon wanted to syndicate a late-night show, and they picked him. But, you know, they burned him out. They did not pay attention. They had him working virtually 7 days a week. He was working the Coast to Coast show, and then Sunday nights he was the one doing Dreamland. Originally, the show was political. It was not, and the Sunday night thing was the things that go bump in the night. And then, of course, the things that go bump in the night got so big, the politics went aside, and it became that nonstop. But in addition to working virtually 7 days a week, on his vacations, he was doing listeners' cruises and all this kind of stuff. Well, hell, there comes a point where you are gonna burn out. And I think that was part of it. But then he had a lot of personal drama that started to get in the mix as well. And so ultimately, he decided he was going to leave. Now, when he left the first time, and as I say, I was designated to replace him, and then I bailed. But when he left the first time, his exit contract was so tight that I joked he couldn't appear in a public restroom. You know, he couldn't be anywhere public. Well, and at the time, I said to somebody, I said, you know, he's got to come back to leave again. you know, under better terms. And that's mm-hmm. ultimately what happened, because they'd given it to Mike Siegel out of Seattle, and that lasted, I think, less than a year. That, yeah. Right. And then Art came back, and then he had it for a couple of years, and then, you know, they tubed it with Nori. But that mm-hmm. was, yeah, there were a lot of things that Art didn't recover well from. And, mm-hmm. you know, then his life got very chaotic. And sadly, he's no longer with us. But I'll tell you, that level of mm-hmm. back pain, I can understand that you're not your normal self.
And then he lost his wife, Ramona.
Well, that was right. Yeah. And that was a very interesting time, and more so that, you know, he announced within literally weeks, almost, 6 weeks or whatever, that he was getting married again.
Yeah, and, that lady in the Philippines.
Right. Yeah. Who
I don't know.
Go ahead.
I wonder if she still lives in his compound out there.
Well, I wouldn't call it a compound, but yeah, I think she absolutely
does because
she had a couple of kids with Art. And
those children,
those kids were very Americanized, you know. And when you think mm-hmm. of that as a responsible parent, you know, she was not only from the Philippines, but she was from the middle of nowhere Philippines, you know. And to try and take two kids who were used to, you know, American standards to that, that's just not a thing you should probably be doing. And mm-hmm. she didn't. And so as far as I know, she is still in Pahrump. And of course, the radio station is still on the air, and Art's friend who got it, she still runs it, as far as I know.
Right. Yeah. Talking about Coast to Coast, did you hear last weekend? I heard that Ed Dames died.
Oh, did he? Oh no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh.
Dr. Doom, that he used to be on, and
Ed Dames, all part of that remote viewing. Ed Dames. And so, of course, remote viewing was a wonderful thing for Art, all sorts of things with regard to that. And you can see both sides of that. But the best thing about that show was to suspend disbelief, you know, and just enjoy it mm-hmm. For what it was. But I know before he died, he had said that he located the Ark of the Covenant, and that was Ed.
Oh.
And he was part of Stargate, which did exist. That was a project that did exist. So, no, I didn't know he mm-hmm. passed, and that's, I'm sorry to hear.
Yeah, I heard it last. I usually tune in on Friday nights. They have open lines the last 2 hours, and I usually, sometimes George will take a Friday night off, and then he'll have the fill-in host, and then he'll be there, and that's the main time. I just listen on Friday nights. I like the open lines, but...
Oh, by the way, I do too, and that was, as far as I was concerned, that's the way the show should have been, period, and for the most part, and yeah, I know,
mm-hmm.
got pushback mm-hmm. on that, but mm-hmm. so Ed Dames, and he was not old, 76.
Yeah, that's what they said.
But I don't think he was well. Now, I had heard that he wasn't doing well, but I don't know what was wrong.
Yeah. All right. Well, I won't keep you. I know you got other callers.
I'm so glad you called. It's nice to hear from you. Call me again soon. Don't wait forever.
You bet.
All right.
I sure will.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. So, Ed Dames. That's a shame. 888-8... Well, I'm not going to give the phone number up because we're not going to get to everybody. I can tell already. That's right. I might not be too good at arithmetic, but I know this. So we'll be back in moments right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, we've only got about 9 minutes to go, so we'll forego the bumper. Yeah, we're going to do some Jackie Chan stuff for Isaac, and we'll do that tomorrow night at the start of the show. And we have 512, who has been hanging on for a good hour almost. Well, 55 minutes, I don't know how good it was, but we will check him out on WGN Radio. Who are you and where are you?
Hey, it's Gary in Austin.
All right. And, what's up, Gary? Thanks for waiting.
Yeah. You know, I was almost going to hang up when you were talking to Johnny. I thought I'd give my time to him.
Oh,
I always enjoy your conversations with him.
Yeah.
I enjoy listening to his show. It's now that he's able to put, you know, tracks in there, it makes you know why he was such a good jock. He's very warm and personable.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's what people related to. But I, too, am a former KOA listener. I had to wait till 850 in Houston went off.
Right.
Because they had post-sunset in those days.
Right.
And, I was going through some rough times in my life then. And you were able to help me pull through those. But you know, I remember listening just about every night, except when there were, I guess, when there were sports, obviously not. But
right, the Nuggets. We had basketball.
Yeah.
The Nuggets. And, yeah. Yeah, that was a great signal. That was a killer signal. I loved that signal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, talk about screwed up behind the scenes. Oh, my dear God. So how I lasted as long as I did, I don't know. But that was a great signal.
I enjoyed listening to them, but, you know, their air sound was a, they were a pretty hip-sounding talk station back then.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't think they're, I think they're probably a shadow of their former selves, but.
Well, I don't know how much of it's live now. Yeah, because, you know, I mean, it had a live overnight show after me, Rick Barber, who was never appreciated and paid almost nothing. I mean, it was just harmful. And then, who was the guy who used to, he was the conductor for the symphony or something, who was married to a ballerina who became a stripper. Oh, why can't I think of her name? Anyway.
But, I know the guy.
Yeah, Tom Jensen. Tom Jensen.
Tom Jensen, yeah.
Yeah, and sadly he killed himself. That was it. But But there were a lot of interesting characters, and of course, you know, Mike Rosen in middays when they brought him in. I remember. And you know, he was so into politics, and he had a business life as well off the air. But I remember one day, I don't remember why, but we both had to be in there to interview whoever was the representative, a female U.S. rep, you know, for Congress. I forget her name, but obviously it was a female, and I knew that she was a liberal, and I knew that Jensen would that Rosen would absolutely hate her. So I remember just going in there. I said, "Now, what party do you belong to?" And I thought Rosen was going to fall off the chair. He was so mad. And so for the rest of the interview, she just ignored him and said, "Now, Raleigh." And I thought it was the funniest damn thing, you know, because I thought, little does she know, I mean, off the air, I'm probably to the right of him, but I'm not going to do this on the air. So, just drove him crazy. So, yeah, he took it all serious. I think he worked for the Coors Foundation or something. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, there were, I can't think of who was the morning man. Gus Merkus did mornings. And it was funny.
Yeah, he was there for a long time.
Yes. And they had decided for the Super Bowl, when the Broncos were going to be in the Super Bowl that was being played in San Diego, that they were going to have this contest drive to the Super Bowl, and they were going to have Gus Merkus and this rented Lincoln drive, and the listeners were going to take a guess on how long it took them to get there and all that. The problem is they didn't ask Gus. And so when they told him what he was doing, he said, "I'm not doing that." At that point, the only person they knew who drove the interstates, guess who got the phone calls? They said, "Raleigh, you're going to drive to San Diego." "Oh, fine." So I go in there, and this is 1988, and this is January of 1988. I go in there, and they hand me what was, you know, a crude sat phone of sorts, you know, and they said, "Okay, so call the station every few hours." And I just looked at them like they were out of their minds. I said, "How? Well, here's how you use the phone. That's not what I'm asking. Where are the cells?" "Oh," I said, "this isn't a sat phone like it's satellite connection. This is a crude cell phone." They didn't understand that I wasn't going to have cell service. So I wound up having to do this calling in from phone booths.
Oh, I remember those.
Yes, right, exactly. So, and, you know, someone won tickets to the Super Bowl or whatever, but I was happy to drive it. That's for sure. So, yeah.
You know, those are interesting evenings to listen. And in fact, one of the things I remember hearing was when Larry Dixon had left KVIL.
Okay, yeah.
He was there for years and years.
Yeah.
And I was, wow, he left there. And then later he wound up at KPLX.
Right.
When I went up there to visit my family, I heard him over there. He sounds pretty good here, too. So,
yeah.
But just some of these things, you know, I remember you talking about, you know, the various interstate stuff and fast food stuff. This is my kind of show.
Yeah.
I wish I could hear this. I wish I could hear a non-controversial talk format 24/7, because people are not, you know, if you don't agree with somebody politically, you're wrong, and we don't like you. So back when I was a kid, you could have disagreements and still be friends, and unfortunately,
oh, it's vitriolic now. No, it's terrible. And well, you know, Michael Spears, who you know from Dallas, of course, for a while he owned that little station at Pinellas Park, PLP, and he was calling it "People Listening to People," and I thought, oh, that's great. Well, it wasn't exactly what we thought, but it could have been. great handle, but didn't quite work out that way. There were fun moments at KOA, but they would always try to do things to, and I think it was intentionally tried to tick me off, but they used to make me go on these remotes all over Colorado. And so, I did a show from the lobby of the Hilton and Grand Junction for no reason whatsoever. So, you know, sometimes when I'd be with John in Durant, oh, yeah, I did a show here, too. Or, Glenwood Springs from the Hot Springs. Oh, dear. And I remember driving there and getting off at that exit, and I was listening to my little cassette, and I'm listening to Lee Dorsey, Do, Re, Mi. And I just burst into tears because I thought, there's nobody within 300 miles who's ever heard of Lee Dorsey, let alone Do, Re, Mi. What am I doing here?
Yeah. If they're lucky, they might have heard Yaya, maybe.
Wait, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's like, oh, God, I have to leave. I want to be in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or something. So anyway, you've ended the show. Call me again, maybe tomorrow night. Okay, thanks. Appreciate
it. Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, so 3 big hours tomorrow night, and we will talk about the tooth fairy and inflation. Yeah, I haven't forgotten about, I forgot completely about it, but we'll do that tomorrow night. So big-time apologies to 847-312 and 917. Call me tomorrow night. And hopefully we'll get to it earlier. Until then, we thank Bob for keeping us on the air. And, of course, you for calling. That's what makes the show a pleasure to do. That's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.